Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jeanette.
And I'm Emily.
Yeah, we're here. That's exciting.
We're both still very tired. We're not even recording this early. It's just...
I know, but we're both kind of lazy, so...
Yes, precisely.
I can't speak for you. I'm lazy.
Oh, actually, no, I'm definitely lazy.
you're not as lazy as me, I feel like. Like, you're able to wake up early and stuff. I'm not.
That's true.
I don't know. I guess it's the only difference. Anyways, how's your week been?
It's been okay. I got my nose pierced, and I've worked. That's the only things that have happened this week.
So fun, though. I want to get my nose pierced. Did it hurt?
Not really. No, it's... Yeah, it's... Feels normal already. Like, I'm used to it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And I'll, well, because of everything going on, like, I couldn't have anyone go back there with me to hold my hand. And so I was thinking this was the worst possible time for me to get my nose pierced.
You're so sad. You could even have, like, a family member.
I mean, no. Since I'm not underage, I didn't have to have, like, a legal guardian back there with me. So.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it's all good. It worked fine. What about you?
Nothing. Just working constantly.
Cool.
Oh, my kitty, she went to the vet yesterday.
Oh.
Got her very first shot.
How did she react with that?
Honestly, they, like, took her away for the shot, which is kind of sad. But she came back. I mean, she seemed fine. She was just trying to escape the whole time.
Oh.
Which is fair.
I mean, yeah, I would also be, like, vaguely terrified.
Sure.
I do not blame her. So, really quickly, let's talk about what's going on, just so everything with George Floyd. I think it's just heartbreaking that this is even happening, and it's definitely... Yeah. I'm... not too sure what to say about the situation. It's just really upsetting. And we should be better by now. Yes. Like, the entire country should be better about this. And there shouldn't be any distinction between races at all.
You know, it's 2020. It's crazy that that's still a thing. But it is. And people need to realize that.
They do. And it's really upsetting that people don't realize that, and they don't think that white privilege is a thing, which it definitely is.
It is.
I mean, yeah.
It's so sad.
It is. And with all the protests going on, it's really scary, because I'm not too sure, like, I really hope no one gets hurt in these protests.
There's a lot of people that have gotten killed, arrested.
It's so sad.
You know.
I saw a video of someone that got pepper sprayed during one of the protests.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a few of those, too.
Mm-hmm. Whew. So, I don't know what else to say about the situation. I just wish it would not be a situation.
My heart goes out to the Floyd family, though.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It was very sad.
It is sad. And hopefully this will be, like, a wake-up call to our entire country.
I'm hoping so.
Mm-hmm.
Although, so far it's taken a lot of wake-up calls.
It has. Yeah, it... Yeah.
It's so sad.
Okay. Well.
I know. This got really sad again.
It's kind of hard to come back from that kind of discussion.
You know.
So, let's... Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No. I mean, I'm down to get started.
Okay. Well, let's do just that then. So, today... Did you see the tweet that I posted earlier?
Today?
Yeah.
No, I just woke up.
Okay. Well, no, it was just saying what the case is. I was wondering if you'd already seen that.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't look then. I like it when it's a surprise.
So today we are going to be talking about the Hillside Stranglers. This is a very well-known case.
Okay.
Have you heard of it at all?
No.
You know, I actually got not the information for it. I got the idea for doing this case from Criminal Minds whenever they talked about it for a brief second in an episode. I was like, ooh, I wonder who they are. So, yeah.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's a good way for me to figure it out. So that works fine.
I like it.
All right. So let me tell you my sources really quickly. So one of my main sources was actually a very, very helpful one. I mean, that makes sense that it would be helpful. I don't know why I would have a source that isn't helpful. So basically, I just Googled about the Hillside Stranglers, and then something popped up, and it is a timeline and a bunch of information from the Department of Psychology from Radford University.
Oh, wow. And
so it's just basically a timeline of his life. And it's just a lot of general information about him, which is very, very helpful. So.
Well, that's cool.
Okay. Yeah. And so, if you guys want to go, I'm not going to use all of the information that I got from this, but if you want to go and look at this information, I would definitely recommend that website. And I also got information from Wikipedia, and I did I kind of fact checked the Wikipedia stuff. I believe them. I know they wouldn't lie to me, so that's good. I don't know why I said it like that. Also, if you can hear papers rustling, I'm so sorry. All of them are on different pieces of paper, and so I have to switch between a lot.
It's okay.
And I also used a book for my research. I read just quite a bit of this book. It's just called The Hillside Stranglers, and it's by Darcy O'Brien. Pretty easy.
Okay.
It also, Darcy O'Brien is an Edgar Award winning author, and I don't know what the Edgar Award is.
What is that? Is that the book version of an Oscar?
I have no idea. I mean, it sounds like a really cool award to get.
Oscar and Edgar are brothers. Edgar is the nerdier one.
Oh, it's the Edgar Allan Poe Awards. So it's for the Mystery Writers of America. Oh, apparently it was canceled for this year. In case you were wondering its standpoint for the year, I don't know why you'd wonder that.
I totally was.
Well, now you know. Okay, so let's go ahead and get into it.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to start our conversation with Kenneth Alessio Bianchi. So he was born on May 22nd, 1951, and he was born to a 17-year-old alcoholic prostitute who gave him up for adoption. He was adopted by Frances Scogliano Bianchi and her husband. And whenever he was a child, he showed really bad signs of being a compulsive liar. And apparently he would throw very violent tantrums. And he was always in a bad mood. He was really bad at school, even though he showed signs that he was very intelligent. So
I met a couple of compulsive liars over the years.
Oh, yeah. So, his mother decided the best way to do it would be to try to curb him
is how it said, like, curb his behavior. And so she decided to send him to a private Catholic school. So he wasn't in the private Catholic school for very long, but while he was in it, he began to have really distorted views of, like, women. And so he would only view them, like, he was always constantly disappointed in them, like how they weren't living up to the standards that he was taught they would, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So weird. It was like his education was, a lot of it was him being taught that whoever he should want to be with would have to be the perfect Catholic woman, apparently. So his views were even more distorted whenever he learned about, you know, how his mother was an alcoholic prostitute. Is everything okay over there? That was a lot of sound.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, it's okay.
I moved my mic.
Oh, okay. I just got worried. Okay. So, whenever his father died, whenever he was 13 years old, and so his mother had to begin working. So, because of that, he got pulled out of the Catholic school just because expenses. And apparently, Kenneth refused to cry or show any emotion from the loss of his father. And once he returned to public school, he was still not a good student. So whenever he was in high school, he joined a motorcycle gang. And he got a tattoo that said, Satan's Own MC.
What does that even mean?
I have no idea. I read that in, I believe it was the article that was by the university. And I was like losing my mind. I didn't know what that meant. And yeah.
I'm just trying to think of like what MC would stand for.
Like, I mean like DJ, I would think, but okay. I don't know what that means. So.
Okay. Moral of the story, weird tattoo. Got it.
Yes. Definitely. So, in 1969, he proposed to a woman named Susan, but she turned him down. Then he ended up getting another girlfriend, and with his girlfriend, he wrote her a letter that said that he was a suspect in the Alphabet murders, which we'll talk about a little bit more later, but I'll also have to do an episode on this. And then he also said that he had killed a man. But she was, like, kind of, she took it as, like, a sick joke, and she didn't, like, take it as a confession at all.
Oh, no.
So then he married a woman named Brenda Beck, who I'm assuming is the girlfriend that he sent the letter to, but honestly, I could not find that answer. This case is, it's not pretty old. This was all happening in, like, the 60s and the 70s, but I just could not find too much information regarding a lot of this, like, the backgrounds on the people, which tends to be, well, to me, like, one of the most interesting parts of it, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Hmm.
So that's kind of upsetting. But so he ended up marrying a woman named Brenda Beck, but because of his twisted views on women, with his schooling, he was with many people during their marriage, and he ended up divorcing, or they ended up getting an annulment, that's what it is, after just a few months. So after this, he enrolls at Monroe Community College to become a police officer. He only took a few classes. Some of the classes were police science and psychology, and he ended up dropping out before he could graduate. After this,
I wonder how many semesters he had left.
I don't know. That's a good question. But
was he almost there?
I don't know. Again, I could not find anything.
I'm so sad.
So, he ended up getting married again. This was, again, I could not find, like, the woman's name or anything like that, but he ends up marrying again, and this time his wife leaves him after 8 months. So he applied for the sheriff's office, but he was turned down, and so he becomes a security guard. But apparently he is charged often with theft by employees that were, like, suspecting of him, or employers, I'm sorry. And then he proposes to Susan a second time. I don't know who Susan is, but apparently he really wanted to marry her.
Oh, and Susan.
Again, all I can find out is that her name was Susan.
Okay.
I don't know who Susan is, but she turned him down again. And he became, oh, I'm so sorry. The reason that she turned him down, goodness gracious, is because she claimed that he needed to have a stable job. So, this is when it goes, like, pretty downhill from here. As if it wasn't already downhill. So, he moves to Los Angeles, and he begins to live with Angelo Buono, who was his cousin, like, his adoptive cousin. And he got a job with the California Land Title Company. He did apply to the Los Angeles Police Reserves, but once again, he was denied for it. And while he was living there, he slept with one of Angelo's son's girlfriends.
Angelo's son's girlfriend? What?
I don't know what happened there, but that he was 25. I don't know how old she was.
Okay.
And so after that, he moved out of his apartment with Angelo, and he moved into his own apartment. And then shortly after that, apparently that was not long-lived, he moved in with Kelly Boyd, who he had met at work. After this, he purchased fake psychology degree and credentials, and he rented out an office space from a psychologist. And so he was just, like, acting as a psychologist and having people come in to him.
What? That's crazy. Dude, he totally could have finished school and then just become a psychologist.
I know. I don't... Ugh. Sorry, I had to drink my coffee.
You're good.
He apparently doesn't have many people that would come in to see him, though. And this is so messed up. He began stating that he had cancer so that he could get out of work, which was just a blatant lie.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Why would you lie about that?
I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. Whoa. I just opened something on my computer that I shouldn't have opened. I was grabbing my paper and I hit a button, apparently. Oh, so he ends up getting fired because they find marijuana in his drawer, like at work. So this is just a little bit later. This isn't... Actually, I believe this is the same year. Yeah, this is in May of 1977. He was 26 years old. So Kelly became pregnant by him. And he proposes, but she says no. And they do not split up, though. So this is where things are going to get not good. This is where the upsetting part of the story is going to happen, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So they didn't have much money. So Kenneth did not have a lot of money. So Angelo had the idea that they could get some girls to work with them, work for them as prostitutes.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. So they met Sabra Hannon and Becky Spears. I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce the first girl's name right. And they forced them to prostitute for them with threats and brutality.
It's so scary.
It's terrifying, yeah. So, Becky Spears met with a lawyer at some point. Again, like, all of the information on this is super, like, choppy. There's not really, like, a flow to it, you know?
Right.
So, Becky Spears met with a lawyer at some point, and she told him about her situation, and so he arranged for her to move out of the city. And after this, Sabra ran away after that happened. So,
it's scary. Sorry, go on.
It's absolutely terrifying. It really is. And so after this, well, you know, their money was gone. Like, they didn't have a source of income anymore. So they decided to impersonate police officers, and then they found another girl who they could force to be a prostitute for them. I could not find her name anywhere on here.
What the heck?
Yeah. I'm assuming she was not kept for very long, but I couldn't find her name, which was really upsetting.
That is so sad.
It is.
Her name, like, wasn't even found.
I know. It is possible I just didn't go to, like, the right source for it, but I don't know.
Maybe.
So they found another girl to be a prostitute for them. So they also met a woman named Deborah Noble. So Deborah Noble was a prostitute. And so they bought a list from her of all of the men who frequented going to prostitutes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So they bought a list from her. And so Deborah and her friend Yolanda Washington delivered the list to Angelo in October of 1977. That's when they found out the list was a fake. And so they could not find Deborah anywhere. And so they decided to take out their anger on Yolanda. So Yolanda was 19 years old, and she worked as a part-time waitress and a prostitute. And she had mentioned what street that she worked on, and since they couldn't find Deborah, they went to go find her.
Oh my gosh.
So Yolanda's body was found on October 17th, 1977, and she was found fully nude. And it was determined that her body had been cleaned before it was dumped. So, you know, they had killed her somewhere and then put her body there.
Right.
Her body was found near a cemetery, or it was found in a cemetery. And the fabric that they had used to strangle her was still around her neck. And it was later discovered that she had been raped as well.
Oh, no.
I know. So the rest of this kind of happens, like, pretty quickly. So on November 1st, 1977, like, not even a full month later, there was a teenage girl found naked on a driveway in La Crescenta. And the owner of the home, this poor guy, he knew nothing about what was going on. This was just the place where they had unfortunately dumped her body. He covered her with a tarp to prevent kids from looking at her on the way to school, like as they were leaving to school, which I thought was just super sweet.
Yes.
I almost started crying over that this morning. I don't know if I'm okay. I just thought that was super sweet, and I feel so bad for this girl. And so he covered her with a tarp, and once the police were there, there were ligature marks on her neck, wrists, and ankles, which had indicated that she was bound and strangled, but again, her body had been dumped.
Oh, no.
So a detective found a piece of light-colored fluff on her eyelid and saved it to be tested. And the coroner report said that she had been raped and sodomized. She was
so cool to be a detective.
It would be. I mean, not for cases like this, but.
Well, no, but the fact that he, like, they found something so tiny, like fuzz.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
Let's test it.
Yeah, it's cool. Definitely really cool. So, so they weighed her at, and she was about 90 pounds, and they, like, thought that she was maybe about 16 years old. She was later identified as the 15-year-old Judith Lynn Miller, who was also called Judy.
No.
Mm-hmm. And so she was a runaway from home. She had dropped out of her high school, and she was an occasional sex worker as well. She was last seen on October 31st, 1977, and she was talking to a man driving a large two-toned sedan on Sunset Boulevard. And what they later discovered, what would happen was they had told her that they were undercover police officers, and they handcuffed her, and they took her to Buenos's upholstery shop. Sorry, I have a hard time saying his last name.
You're
and
good.
That is where she was killed. 5 days later, there was another nude body that was found in Glendale. There was also ligature marks on the neck, the wrists, and the ankles. So there was a total of 5. And she had also been strangled. She had been raped, but she was not sodomized, which was different than, I believe, both of the last two. She was
sodomized. Can you explain that again?
It's basically anal raping.
Oh, okay. Dang. Okay. Uh-huh. Never mind. Sad.
I know. And so this woman was identified as a 21-year-old woman named Elisa Teresa Kasten, and she also went by Lisa or Lissa, maybe. She was a professional dancer, but she was not a prostitute like the ones before.
Okay.
They had followed her home from work, and they had pulled her over on the side of the road after they showed her a fake police badge. And then they handcuffed her and told her that she needed to be taken in for questioning, which is when they probably took her to the upholstery shop again, like the other two. So, next we're going to talk about Catherine Lore Baker. So this one didn't end up being a murder. This is called the aborted murder of Catherine Lore Baker. Okay. And her name is spelled in such an interesting way. It's C-A-T-H-A-R-I-N-E, which I've never seen Catherine spelled that way.
Me neither.
I mean, I just thought that was a really cool spelling.
No, it is. Catherine.
I don't know why I've decided to take time out to tell you that, but I did.
I liked it.
Thank you. So this was also in early November. They were going really, really fast through all of this, as I'm sure you can tell. Like, the first three were within probably, like, a few weeks of each other, which is terrifying. So, what were that? I'm sorry.
Sorry, no, I was just thinking. Go on.
So, in early November 1977, the two men, they approached 24-year-old Catherine Lore Baker, and she was the daughter of Peter Lore, who was apparently famous for a role as a serial killer in a movie, M. And so they had the intent of abducting her and killing her. But then they found a picture of her sitting on her father's lap with her identification, and then they let her go. Like, so they likely pulled her over as a policeman again, asked for her identification, and saw that picture of her sitting on her father's lap.
Mm.
And they probably recognized him from the role that he played. And so they were thinking, okay, this is probably too big of a person to take, if that makes sense.
So, I mean, so, not sad, but also kind of sad, like, for the others.
No, of course. I know what you mean. So, she didn't realize, like, that they weren't real police officers until after, later on, when they were arrested. So, yeah. So next we're going to talk about Dolly Cepeda and Sonia Johnson. They were 12 years old and 14 years old, and they were last seen boarding a bus in front of the Eagle Rock Plaza as they were heading home. Actually, the last time they were seen was when they were getting off the bus, and they were approached by a two-tone sedan, which has been normal for all of these, and apparently there were two men inside. That was the last that they were seen. Their corpses were found by a 9-year-old boy.
Oh, no.
Yeah, who was... This is so sad. He apparently was looking for treasure in a trash heap on a hillside near Dodger Stadium. And this was on November 20th, 1977. That poor boy.
This, I mean... Sad.
I mean, obviously, poor Dolly and Sonia, and I feel so bad for them. I hope that they're resting well. Whenever they were found, their bodies had already begun to decompose, and it was determined that they had been strangled and raped. So, on that same day, November 20th, 1977, there were hikers, and they found the naked body of a 20-year-old named Christina Weckler. She was an honor student at the Art Center College of Design, and apparently she was deemed to be a loving and serious young woman who should have a bright future ahead of her. Mm. That's so sad.
Oh my gosh. It's horrible.
And so she was found on a hillside between Glendale and Eagle Rock. And once she was found, there were ligature marks on her wrists, ankles, and neck, just like usual. And there were, once he turned her over, there were bruises on her breast.
That is so sad.
Mm-hmm. And so it was clear, just based off of the body, that she had been raped and sodomized as well. However, there was something different between her and the last victims, as there were two puncture marks in her arm, but there were no signs of her being a drug addict. Like, there were no needle tracks that indicated that she was a drug addict. So it was later revealed that she had been injected with Windex.
What?
Yeah. I know. I heard that, and I just...
What does that do to the body? Do you know?
I don't know what that does. I think that may have been their way of trying to kill her in, like, a new way, maybe.
That is so sad.
I know. So, now we're going to move on to Jane King. So, on November 23rd, 1977, her body was found, and she was 28 years old. Her name was Evelyn Jane King, and it was very badly decomposed. She had gone missing about November 9th, and she was found near the Los Feliz off-ramp of the Golden State Freeway. I cannot pronounce anything. The severity of the decomposition prevented whether she had been raped or tortured, but it was proven that she had been strangled like the others. So in response, authorities created a task force, and it was initially composed of 30 officers of the LAPD and the Sheriff's Department and the Glendale Police Department. and to catch the predator who is now dubbed the Hillside Strangler. So on November 29th, 1977, they found the body of an 18-year-old named Lauren Ray Wagner. Oh no, I turned my page and the wrong notes were out.
Oh no.
Okay, here we are. Who was a business student who lived with her parents in San Fernando Valley. And she was found and she had the ligature marks in the normal places now, which was on her neck, her ankles, and her wrists. And there were also burn marks on her hands that indicated that she had been tortured.
That's so sad.
Mm-hmm. Her parents had expected her to come home before midnight. And the next morning, they had found her car parked across the street with the door ajar. Apparently, the woman who lived in the house where her car was parked in front of, they had seen her abduction. And apparently, the woman stated that she saw two men. One was tall and young, and the other one was older and shorter, and he had bushy hair. And she said that she heard Lauren cry out, "You won't get away with this," during her abduction. Now, something I have to ask is, why didn't she say anything?
Yeah, that's true.
No. I don't know why she didn't say anything. It's just a little bit weird. So now we're going to talk about Kimberly Martin. She was found on December 14th, 1977, and she was 17 years old, and she was a sex worker. There were signs of torture on her as well, and she was found in a deserted lot near Los Angeles City Hall. She had previously joined a call girl agency because she feared exposing herself on the streets whenever the strangler was loose. The killers happened to place a call to the agency from a Hollywood Public Library payphone, and she was the call girl who was dispatched. When the police investigated the apartment that she was dispatched to, they found it vacant and broken into. So she took a job as a call girl because she didn't want to be on the streets because of the Hillside Strangler. That's terrifying. I feel
so scared.
So, this is going to be our final victim. Her name was Cindy Hudspeth. She was discovered in Los Angeles on February 17th, 1978. So, that was a really quite big jump from December to February. Because, Keep in mind, up until this point, everything had happened in November through December. So, like, almost 3 months is a really big jump there. A helicopter pilot spotted an orange Datsun, which was abandoned off a cliff near the Angeles Crest Highway. The police responded to the scene, and they found the body of the car's owner, 20-year-old Cindy Lee Hudspeth, who was a student and a part-time waitress, in the trunk. Her corpse had shown ligature on the neck, the wrists, and the ankles, and it had shown that she was raped and tortured. It appeared that she had been strangled and put into the trunk of the car, which was then pushed off of the cliff that was above. So, after a lot of investigation, they decided, they charged Bianchi and Buono with the charges of the murder. I'm sorry, I said that in a really, really weird way. So, Kenneth had fled to Bellingham, Washington, which is where he was arrested by the Bellingham Police Department for raping and murdering two women that he had lured to a home for a house-sitting job. He tried to set up an insanity defense, which you know what that is, right? Whenever they tried to say that they're insane.
Yes.
And so they
yes.
can get, yeah, you know, a better sentence. And he claimed that he had dissociative identity disorder and that a personality separate from himself committed the murders. So the court psychologist, like Dr. Martin Orne, they observed Bianchi and they found that he was faking it. So he agreed to plead guilty and testify against Angelo in exchange for some leniency. At the conclusion of Angelo's trial, which was in 1983, Judge Ronald M. George, who later became the Chief Justice of California Supreme Court, stated this during the sentencing. I would not have the slightest reluctance to impose the death penalty in this case were it within my power to do so. Ironically, although the defendants utilized almost every form of legalized execution against their victims, the defendants have escaped any form of capital punishment. So Kenneth is serving a life sentence at the Washington State I can never say this word. Penitentiary in Walla Walla. And Angelo died of a heart attack on September 21st, 2002 in Calipatria State Prison in California, where he was serving his life sentence. Wow, I really can't pronounce anything, can I?
It's okay. We all knew that.
That's true. That is very true. So in 1980, Kenneth began a relationship with a woman named Veronica Compton. And during his trial, she testified for the defense. She was later convicted and imprisoned for attempting to strangle a woman that she had lured into a motel in an attempt to have authorities believe that she was the Hillside Strangler, and she was still on the loose, and the wrong man was imprisoned. Kenneth had given her some smuggled semen to make it look like a rape murder committed by the Hillside Strangler, and she was released in 2003.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That last part is insane. I know that there's a lot of people who really look at serial killers and they want to be with them, you know?
It's so weird. I don't like it.
It's so terrifying. Like, for example, everything that's going on with Ted Bundy, who we do still need to do our three-parter on.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Like, something about him being handsome tends to make people think, oh, well, no, he's attractive. He couldn't do these things.
Which is stupid.
It's so stupid. And it happens so often, too. It's absolutely terrifying. But yeah, that is the case of the Hillside Stranglers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
I know. I'm sorry that you had to listen to that. If you are interested in more of this case, I would definitely recommend the article. In fact, do you have any questions for me regarding him? Because I'm sure it's all on this. This is all about Kenneth specifically.
Not on the spot, no.
All right. Well, for example, his IQ was 116.
Oh.
Uh-huh. He had one child, and he did live with his children. And apparently, whenever he was, I believe it was 10 years old, he had bladder control problems. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And also, he was suspected of the Alphabet murders in New York, but his involvement was never confirmed, not concerned.
Confirmed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
So, The type of serial killer that he was organized lust, by the way.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. Very
I hate the
ew.
Way that sounds.
Oh, absolutely. It's awful. So, yeah.
Ooh, man.
Now, have a great rest of your day, because it's still pretty early in the day.
Start to the day.
Yep. I mean, I have to go to work in, like, I have to be there in, like, 40 minutes now, so.
Oh, my God. Well. All right. Well, on that note, y'all email us at
horrorslumberparty@gmail.com.
Follow us on Instagram.
Horror Slumber Party Podcast.
And Twitter.
party_horror.
And make sure you keep up with these social media platforms. That way you know when we post next and what we're going to post next. If we want to give any spoilers, make sure you let us know what you are wanting to hear. And if you've had your own personal, like, spooky experience, we want to know. I like ghosts. Anyways, thank y'all so much for listening. Good night and scary dreams.